We expect students to begin clustering around institutions of higher education this time of year. It is not generally part of the picture to expect bees and other pollinators to show up on campus, but a number of schools, large and small, have, in essence, put out the welcome mat for pollinators, and they're being recognized for it. The Sierra Club recently put out a list of 14 pollinator-friendly colleges. Right at the top of the list, Southern Oregon University. Three guests from SOU join us to talk about what their secrets are. Mike Oxendine is the landscape director at SOU. You're in the studio with me. Mike, good to see you. Vincent Smith is here as well. He is an associate professor and the chair of the Department of Environmental Science and Policy, also in the studio. Vincent, good to see you again.
Thank you for the invite.
And Leslie Eldridge is here. She's an instructor of environmental science and policy and coordinates some of the work that goes on at the Pollinator Gardens on campus. Leslie, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
So were there, I mean, SOU apparently was the number one bee campus in the country. Is that right, Mike Oxendine?
I don't know if we're the number one bee campus.
As in the first one.
We were the first, yeah.
And so how did that come about?
There was a couple of people on campus, myself included, and Jamie Hickner, who had reached out to Bee City USA and their director, Phyllis Stiles. And we had just received our first designation as Tree Campus USA and realized that there is no Bee Campus USA, but there's a Bee City USA. And so when we reached out to Phyllis and we talked to her about the potential to start a Bee Campus USA, she was super excited and very supportive and was in need of an institution and people with that knowledge at the campus level of how we were going to make that happen so that other colleges as well could apply for this and what type of accreditation it was going to be and what the requirements to be a Bee Campus USA was going to be.
And Bee so we Campus, like Bee City, run out of the Xerces Society in Portland, is that right?
It is now run out of the Xerces Society. Originally, it was initiative of North Carolina and Phyllis Stiles, and then Xerces took it over this last year.
So. Right. So what kinds of things do you have to do to qualify? What kinds of things have to be present on a Bee Campus?
So you need to have designated funding for pollinator ecology and pollinator habitat creation. You have to host workshops for students. You have to have service learning projects for students. You have to put up signage to educate the public and the student body to the benefits of pollinators. You have to fill out wonderfully long and descriptive form every year that talks about the number of pollinator beds you put in each year, the number of ecology classes you were able to produce, the number of students that you impacted, the number of faculty and staff volunteers that you had, how much vegetation on campus you converted from something that wasn't pollinator friendly, like a lawnscape, to something that was. How much you've reduced chemical usage on campus that could be harmful to pollinators, and the percentage of reclaimed space without the use of herbicides. So it's a really inclusive list of things that we came up with that makes your campus a certified Bee Campus.
That has to include lots of people from the sounds of it. And Leslie Eldridge, I heard a chuckle of recognition from you about the length of the form. Was there a lot of stuff to put on there?
Well, Mike could speak to that more than myself. I am lucky enough to be the one who gets to work with the undergraduates out in the field, but I know they have a lot of paperwork to do.
So talk about the work you do with the undergraduates. What kinds of things do you do with them to make this a more pollinator-friendly place?
Yeah, I'm just wrapping up my first year here at SOU, and Mike and I have worked together a lot with our introductory courses in the Environmental Science and Policy Department. One course that I teach is Introduction to Environmental Science from the Biological Perspective, but our labs are a little different than what you would normally think of as an academic lab. We're not in a classroom with beakers or anything like that. What Mike and I do is we try to give the students a real experience in their region and local knowledge of their surroundings. And one of the things that we've done is using local and natural materials. We've built pollinator habitat, using power tools, which the students love. They say, wow, this is not your normal science class.
Better than the beakers, right?
we you know, Mike tells us a little bit about it, and then we build these habitats, and we go out behind the science building to the Rocca Arboretum and place them in trees. Students are all got their phones out, taking pictures of the habitat that they've built and carefully placed, explained why they're having it in a certain spot, facing a certain direction. And, you know, they go up there 6 months later to look, see if their habitat is still in place. We've also sown native flower seeds in the arboretum. And then another thing that we do to just sort of raise awareness of food systems and the importance of pollinators on food production as we go to the farm at SOU, and we work on the farm and talk a little bit about how individual choices impact the economics, politics, ecology of our region.
Wow, all kinds of stuff tucked in there. We're talking about making Southern Oregon University a pollinator-friendly campus, number one on a list provided by the Sierra Club of schools large and small. Leslie Eldridge is an instructor in the Department of Environmental Science and Policy. Vincent Smith, who you'll hear from in a moment, is the chair of the department. Mike Oxendine is the landscape director at SOU. Join the conversation. Got questions? Got comments? We'd love to hear from you. 800-838-3760 to get in by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Vincent Smith, give us a sense of the importance of the region around the campus, because obviously when you're trying to attract pollinators, you're doing it within a certain ecosystem. And how important is the area around Southern Oregon University to biological diversity?
It's interesting that I would make the comparison there to the way we recruit students. I mean, SOU is an important component of this, but the region is a real player. You know, if we're not going to be a pollinator-friendly campus without an area or region that has forage available to these pollinators. So there's this concept in biology called island biogeography, this idea that we focus frequently on islands. And in the last 10 or 20 years, we've been focusing on what's called the matrix, the region around the island. And that's what you're asking about, right? What is Ashland and Talent and Medford and the surrounding hillsides going to do in terms of these pollinators? And that plays a real role. So on campus, we can't forget to be asking questions about what's the impact of agriculture, vineyards, and cannabis production on these pollinators. And it's a really important question to ask.
Cannabis production, I didn't even consider that part of it, but does that change anything about the practices that you guys have done just on campus to account for that?
You know, what cannabis does, if you're growing cannabis alone, is it's a potential forage crop, right? So it adds to a potential feed source for these pollinators. However, with the chemical usage in cannabis, it can be a challenge. And that's true for all crops. Those who use chemicals that are dangerous to either honeybees or to our native pollinators can impact their total population.
All right, so the chemicals can affect them, but I have to ask about the effect of the cannabis too. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that have any particular intoxicating effect on bees or butterflies?
From a research perspective, I'm not sure there's an answer to that question. I know that there are a number of individuals who are selling cannabis-infused honey and are talking about cannabis-derived pollen in their honey, but I don't know of any specific research based on that.
Mike Oxendine, there was a discussion earlier about the things you have to do on campus, including the use of chemicals in the landscaping, which is right in your department then. So
yeah.
How much has that changed to make SOU a pollinator-friendly place?
Well, that's a great question. I always start the chemical conversation with perceptions of students and their parents, and the fact that we have to recruit and retain students here as a business model for higher education. And we've been trying to change the perception of what a four-year institution can look like, what the outdoor environment of a four-year institution can look like. And we've drastically decreased our reliance on chemically synthetic herbicides while testing and trying out new alternatives to that, including we use flame torch weed burners. We've tried using vinegar as an acid solution. We've gone with clove oil and other types of concentrated oils to get rid of weeds, and then good old-fashioned hand pulling. Also, if you look at our lawns on campus, you won't find one that doesn't include tons of clovers and dandelions and other types of what people would consider pest weeds. If we can change the perception that people have of what a well-manicured, beautiful, sustainable native landscape can be, I think that we'll be able to reduce and eliminate reliance on chemicals altogether.
So you're pushing the envelope a little on the golf course look. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be just plain green grass.
Exactly. And that brings up the grass is a food desert for pollinators. So if you are a very small insect and you have to feed and get your nutrients and your water, if you come up to 20 acres of lawn and you have to fly across that to find the next flowers, it ends up being a type of food desert. So pollinators typically forage multiple times in just 20 minutes. And so to make that travel, we need to be putting in pollinator plants, you know, as close together as possible to create those islands and pockets where they can make it healthily through campus.
Pollinator-friendly campuses, the discussion topic here on the Jefferson Exchange, Southern Oregon University, atop the list on a list put out by the Sierra Club recently. Mike Oxendine, Vincent Smith, Leslie Eldridge, our guests on the Exchange. Leslie Eldridge, I want to get a little further into the discussion of the pollinator habitat. I mean, you were talking about the power tools and the students loving that. What kinds of structures are you building that are getting hung in the trees?
Yeah, you can actually go out and probably see some of them right now. We've done a couple different things. We have had large stumps, just blocks of trees, and drilled holes in them. What you're really looking for are long, narrow tube-like habitat for native solitary species to lay their larvae in. And then we've also used local bamboo and all different sizes are really ideal, and lash them together with twine and put them up high off the ground and position them such that they won't fill with water.
Vincent Smith, are we trying to attract just bees, just any bees, or are we focused on honeybees, or what's the general realm of animals we're trying to encourage to make the place at least a stopping point, if not home?
So if we look at the total economic value of pollinators in the United States today, for example, it's about $25 billion in economic valuation associated with pollinators. Of that total, $15 billion or so is honeybees. So in terms of what we're trying to attract, clearly honeybees are an important pollinator, but they're not the only one. We have a lot of native pollinators that are incredibly important. In our region, native pollinators are associated with what you would see in a pollination in your garden, for example. Not everyone is keeping honeybees close to their gardens. So having habitat for these native pollinators is important, not only for our economic value, but they also play an incredible role in the ecosystem itself.
So we talked about all the practices and getting a real sense of lots of people doing lots of things here. Mike Oxendine, do you keep track of the person hours involved in making SOU a pollinator-friendly campus?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had about 600 volunteers just last year alone, which is our typical turnout.
Wait, 600 distinct volunteers, not 15 people doing 40 hours each or something?
No, it was 600 individual volunteers for over 2,600 hours of volunteer labor force.
Wow. And
yeah, we absolutely keep track of it.
So are there still people who get nervous around bees? I mean, has anybody expressed concerns to any of you, or are there concerns you've had to address about some of the pollinator amenities on campus, or gee, I'm afraid to go over there because there are a bunch of bees?
Absolutely. Yeah, like for example, we had a native bee, well, it's pollinator bees or honeybees that moved into a tree cavity in a main thoroughfare of campus, and I was asked to put up some warning signs around the honeybees that they were there and that there was a higher chance of getting stung. It's an education thing, though. You just explain to people that honeybees are not aggressive. They're not going to bother you. You can walk right past them. The only time you're going to get stung is if one gets stuck in your hair or you smash it under the collar of your shirt on accident or something. And that as adults on a college campus, it's really important that if you know that you're allergic to bees, to take those precautions and carry an EpiPen with you. And if you are nervous about walking close to a hive of bees, keep your distance.
So you clearly impressed the people who are looking for pollinator amenities. Have you impressed the bees? I mean, is there evidence that you are seeing success? Are there more pollinators showing up on campus?
It's an interesting question, because this year we've seen a drastic decline in monarch butterfly sightings. Mm-hmm. And I assume that maybe the forest fire smoke has something to do with that. We're networked in with Pollinator Project Rogue Valley and Southern Oregon Monarch Advocates. And it's not just a SOU thing where we're seeing a decrease in monarch butterfly sightings. It's all over the valley. And that could be attributed to a lot of different factors, obviously smoke being one of them. But we do see more honeybees on campus and more native bees year after year. And we're trying to establish a pollinator way station on campus where we can actually monitor exactly how many we are seeing year to year, so we can start keeping data on that to see what the trend is and if our efforts are being successful.
Leslie Eldridge, the kinds of things that you're built for bees, can they be closely located to the things that you're putting out there for butterflies, for example? I mean, can those mingle in the same gardens, for example?
Yeah, I think all those things can be co-located, and you know, working with Mike has been a really great experience, both for myself and for the students. I can't really describe how, after doing a lab with Mike, the students come to me and they say, "I've never looked at campus this way before." They see it in a whole new light. I like to call him the Lorax of SOU, because he speaks for all the non-human, not just the trees, but all the non-human life on campus. And he really like shares that vision with the students. And after they have a lab with him, they say, "Wow, you know, I think of all these trees as different personalities and the things that are wrong with them and what illnesses they're fighting." And you know, it's really special to have a landscaping supervisor who has this vision and brings his knowledge to the environmental science department. And so I think that's what makes us really unique and helped make us number one in the country.
Mike Oxendine blush. Let's finish up here. Just about a minute left. Vincent Smith, are we attracting not just pollinators but students as well? I mean, are any people talking about they want to come to SOU because of the fact that the place is pollinator friendly?
Yes, absolutely. Two things have to happen. One, if we're going to continue to rank at the top of Sierra Club magazines, we have to recruit the type of students who want to support this work. SOU does what the students want it to do. And the reason that this occurs, the reason that Mike is given the resources and the support he needs to do this work, is because students support him. So we have to recruit those students. And in turn, the work we're doing is in fact impacting who we can recruit. So we have materials out there on the internet, as well as printed materials that go out to high schools and to those who are going to transfer in from community colleges, that teaches them and shows them the work that we do. And we're known for that work across the country. So yes, we're getting students who come from a broader swath of the United States and abroad than many other programs on campus, largely because they want to be here in Southern Oregon and they want to be at a college campus that supports the kind of things that they believe in, sustainability.
It certainly helps to end up on the top of a list of 14 pollinator-friendly campuses put up by the Sierra Club. That's where Southern Oregon University sits. Through the work of the landscape director, Mike Oxendine, Vincent Smith, the chair of the Environmental Science and Policy Department, and Leslie Eldridge, working with the students in that very same department. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.